Let's hit this thing going. We're 10 minutes of chitter chatter. Let's hit this thing officially. All right. Intro. 3, 2, 1, go. So, hey, everyone. Happy Friday, officially. Welcome to the Digital Catch Rundown. This is episode 152. And we're joined by the one and only, as far as I know, Callisti. How's it going, man?
I'm doing good. How are you?
No problem. Just doing good. Just, I finally have a use for the Doge in my background because we're going to be covering covering the subject a little bit. But, yeah, fun times. This whole week, it's so weird because crypto is not nearly as eventful as it used to be. Like, it used to be centralized in its eventfulness, where if it was a big week, everyone knew it was a big week because this happened and that happened and blah, 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 right? But now, I saw, like, nothing of note come up this week. I mean, what are we going to talk about? And then I was like, oh, wait, a few pretty interesting developments actually happened, and that's what we were talking about, but like most people don't even know about it, so that's right. It's kind of crazy. Had you heard talk about any of the spam attacks or the Dogecoin's doing super well?
Like, a little bit of like chatter about the Nano stuff is coming through on my Twitter. I mean, all of crypto is pumping right now, so I wouldn't be surprised to hear that Doge is doing pretty good. And then I think you mentioned to me in the DMs the Monero block thing. I only saw like brief mentions of that like yesterday. I didn't really dig into it much. So I've been kind of out of the loop for like the past month or so, only to kind of just now getting back into things.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest reason I do this show, is so I force myself to not be out of the loop like that, because otherwise very much so I'd be right where you are. I just know nothing about anything that I'm not working on myself, but it kind of helps to poke your head out here and there. All right, let's hit on some of these things. Of course, let's start out with the CoinATM Radar shell, because this podcast is proudly sponsored by CoinATM Radar. And when buying crypto with cash, an ATM is much more reliable and safer than meeting some random dude in a random place and getting stabbed. Hopefully you won't get stabbed, though. And unlike an exchange, which could freeze your account, you truly own all the crypto you buy. With CoinATM Radar, you can find crypto ATMs and other services where you can buy or sell cryptocurrencies for cash. On their website, you can search by coin address if the ATM supports selling as well as buying, and you can also search by geo area, country, state, city, etc. You can also check and compare actual current fees at different ATMs. Go to coinatmradar.com to find out more, to coinatmradar.com. And I will say, they didn't, as I say every single week, maybe I'll shut up one of these times, but they approached me not thinking they'd make any money off of this, just be like, this guy's aligned. And first off, they pay me in Bitcoin Cash, which is nice. So I do have a regular BCH income, which I'm always happy for. But also, if you check out their ex Twitter account, whatever, they have some spicy takes. They've been really not liking the way the crypto and Bitcoin world is going a lot. Actually, maybe I'll just throw them a freebie.
CoinATM Radar follows me. Nice. I'll give them a follow.
Maybe I just got to find something, because they have had some spicy takes that I'm just like, hell yeah. Let's see. They've been talking smack about Lightning. That's always great. But I like when they dump on people I don't like either. So that's always good. You know, it's just kind of a 2-for-1. But I'll put up on the screen right here. They were BTC Sessions, who I have nothing against the dude. He seems to do fantastic educational videos on how to actually use BTC and Lightning and all those kinds of things. However, he's showing Liquid stuff right here, where it says Liquid sits in this middle ground where it's not as good as self-custody, but it's nowhere near as bad as having it on exchange. It's federated, although it's kind of Liquid shilling, which is disgusting. And CoinATM Radar quote tweeted, said, "In the world where you distinguish between check, you control your own money, or X, you don't control your own money, and check, you hold a bearer asset, and E, you hold an IOU. Liquid is similar to a balance on an exchange, equals no control over your money, plus you get a permission, promissory IOU. Don't get misled. So they're spicy in the good way, and I'm very happy. Like, I've always used the service anyway, because when I travel outside of the U.S., and I sometimes need to get cash because, you know, I can't always spend crypto in the same way that I use here. You know, it's a great resource for that, but I had no idea that they were this based, as they say. So, so that's good. Let's actually hit on, I don't know, I don't really know this dude, but Paolo Baga or whatever, he's in a bunch of Bitcoin Cash.
Oh, yeah, he's a VCHer.
Yeah, so Nano posted, right? This was February 26th, so, you know, a week or so ago. The Nano network is currently undergoing a performance degradation due to a potential attack, meaning transactions are delayed. We are in the process of gathering additional information about the situation. And so, of course, you have so many Bitcoin Cash people popping up and tagging people and kind of doing a little dance thing, which I didn't say anything about because I have my own reservations about the Nano system, but I'd rather just, let me just watch this happen and see what are the results and get my conclusions there. It's not like when some custodial Lightning thing gets banned in the US, I do dance on that grave instantly. But you know, for Nano, I sit back. And so Paolo Aga, he says, "Where are all the bots in Nano Army who always comment under my BCH post claiming how Nano is superior?" He just jumped on that like right away. Yeah, I mean, what's your hot take on this whole thing, having now just seen it?
I mean, I really want to know the extent of the performance degradation, because, I mean, I saw a lot of, like, you know, we've got some lasers firing, our green lasers versus their blue lasers, right? All right, who's the better blockchain, right? At the end of the day, I thought we settled a lot of these debates, like, 2 years ago in early January 2022, where we're just like, yep, we're all going for peer-to-peer cash. So, you know, may the best blockchain win. So I want to see the data. I want to see the actual effect. I know that BCH would be able to handle the load and not skip a beat. Apparently, I did read a lot of people saying that they were having issues with transactions taking a long time to like show up on the other end. Obviously, that's not great user experience, but I see just as many Nano people saying that they're not affected and that Nano's working just fine. So again, I need to see actual data on it, or I need to actually see it for myself, or maybe get some more anecdotal evidence from all around.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good post. More would be nice. I don't think that a lot of communities like to do this much research into, or this much publication about the depths of, like, this happened, this blah, 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 because they'd rather just move past it and not have negative PR. But also, opponents probably aren't as good at, like, they don't want to do so much research in an objective, fair way into maybe a competitor or something like that. So you end up having not a lot of coverage there. But one thing is interesting to note. So Nano has no base layer fees, right? There are Nano services that do add-on fees, but Nano itself doesn't have fees. It's the open representative voting DAG kind of structure is pretty much like a delegated proof of stake with some differences, right? Kind of like that. That's the closest thing I'd say. You know, people are going to freak out. Sorry, I'm trying to dumb it down for people. But so basically, because the blockchain, I guess, if you want to call it that, is so lightweight, you can get a lot of transactions through for very cheap, and they still go, or for no money, right? For instantly. The problem is, at massive scale, all of a sudden, everything has a limit. And so what they did is they implemented a bucketing sort of system where if your wallet has this much, your account, because it's an account-based, not a UTXO coin, it's account-based, your account has this much, then you can send you get rate limited to a certain extent, right? You can send to a certain amount. And then if there's all a certain transaction capacity segmented by the buckets. So whales, like all whales can send this many, or the priority goes, you know, they get kind of rate limited if the whales send too much. The minnows, and then you, all the way down. And so basically, first off, that explains why people have wildly different experiences, because one of the buckets might have been being spammed more than the other bucket. And so in order to successfully execute an attack, you'd have to have you'd have to have like some really like a few big heavy accounts. That means you have a lot of nano, and then a few of the then disperse them all the way down the buckets and just be spamming constantly through these to sort of fill that thing up. But it is based on accounts, so you'd have to have multiple accounts. There's so it basically makes it super tricky to try to spam the network, but it does happen, and you can spam the crap out of a bucket and be like, especially the lower buckets, you can be like, all right, if you have almost no nano, if you have not like almost none to a very small amount, an attacker could theoretically just spam the crap out of that with like a million different accounts, and so that only people with a certain balance could really reliably send, and so then just basically eliminate it for the poors kind of thing. You could kind of do that. And so I don't know if this is testing the bucketing system so that then maybe you can say, hey, we for a fee will send from one of our buckets that we always have a good bucket ready to go. And so maybe they're trying to like test out if they can wreck the network for the lower people and force a fee system in there. Maybe that's, I don't know if that it's either that or it's just someone messing around or someone just trying to see if they can take down the network. I don't know. Do you think it's just too conspiratorial to think that it might be someone pre-testing a business model?
I think somebody's probably just spamming it for the lulz, to be honest. And that's just
Yeah.
my take on it. Like a business use case, I think somebody would have to do that preliminary research to begin with either way. So whether it's for the lulz or for business, it's the same effect. The business is going to kind of have to. Maybe it's less for the lulz and more fuck around and find out because somebody's got to get the data. Again, like can the blockchain actually sustain high load? Or I guess it's not really block, it's block DAG, whatever. Can nano sustain it? Got to find out before you're even going to propose putting a serious business model on top of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is all extremely like experimental at this stage. Even older chains, kind of get a thing going, but it's very, very fun to see, I think. So let's hit this CASPA quote. This hold on, from CASPAfax. That's another CASPA is one of those new privacy coin thingies, whatever. That I have annoying bots everywhere. Anyway, so this now fellow posted that says, and finally, nano backlog clean after a multi-million-dollar, a multi-million transaction, massive spam attack. Doesn't kill you, makes you stronger. And then this CASPAfax person said, the spam attack just showed you that Nano can be brought to a standstill with very little funding on cheap hardware. Nothing about Nano is stronger after this. You have 82-second confirmation times with no backlog. CASPA, whatever, he's shilling his coin. And then this FYI, the Nano has a bucket time system to slow down spam transaction. So the transaction time you see is mostly the spam ones. Legit transactions take a lot less. And yeah, good points on both sides. One, to disrupt the network, it didn't seem to be as hard as you'd think, but then and or expensive as you think. But also, a lot of people who are kind of seasoned seem to get their transactions through. Now, the problem, though, in what I see is when you send, you still have to clear this giant backlog of spam transactions. Those are free, right? And nodes just still have to work at just doing this, at processing all these transactions. And so it's not necessarily like you just, if anyone can just come and spam anytime and maybe disrupt some networks, okay, but making the nodes lose money because it does cost infrastructure, right? It is cost, obviously, electricity to run a node, not very much, but it does cost bandwidth, it costs et cetera, and to just have them burn, have them spend money to run infra for to process just crap for free. I don't think that that's sustainable long term.
Yeah, I mean, isn't the proof of work calculated client side though, not on the nodes? So, I mean, I really just am kind of failing to understand like how it's bottlenecking so hard. like from a technical level. And I think part of it is just because, to me, like nano is just like a really convoluted technology. Like when you're explaining like the whole ORV and buckets thing, it's just it reminds me of SegWit in terms of oh yeah, we're gonna like add all this technical complexity as a band-aid for like a problem that was already solved.
Yeah, although with to be fair, I think SegWit was part something very necessary and part something very not just like convoluted, but bad faith. Like just some convoluted crap to say, oh, it is a block size increase, guys. Whereas I think that I would call all Nano's technical stuff to be good faith. They have these parameters. They want instant and zero fee transactions that can just that's it. That's what they want. And they're willing to do anything to figure out how to make that work. And so yeah, it is complicated. I like to see, like, I'm a big fan of the Nano experiment. I'm not a big Nano user or really user at all these days, but I'm a very big fan of the experiment because it's kind of like BSV is like, the conspiracy theory of cryptos, where it's just like all this, everything you heard about everything is wrong. And like, I'm glad that that's out there because it causes you to like go back and like re-examine your root assumptions on things. And so Nano being like, well, up is down, down is up. Everything you know about incentives is just upside down, man. Ooh. It's like, okay, let me get my argument sharp, because or let me do my research so I actually know what I'm talking about because this is a challenge to every orthodoxy. And that's kind of an interesting thing. I should point out this tweet thing that MJ, who has also been on here, so I don't want to hate on her too much. This crypto influencer lady posted in just an unapologetic thirst trap says, maybe when the super cycle hits, I'll finally get laid. Okay, sure, lady. And then MJ said, after some detailed analysis, we've traced the source of the nano spam attacks. So, anyway, just a fun little
Spammer
throwaway there.
was spamming transactions with this number.
Yeah. So the nano thing, interesting. What I expect is at scale, people will stay away from it, slash it'll break, or there will be a paid system put on top of it. We already have an anonymous, the custodial mixer thing that they got does assess an extra fee to be used, and I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I just think that stuff like a good coin join, like, any coin join implementation or cash fusion or whatever is a lot better because it's not custodial and, all that kind of stuff. But I'm okay with that. And there was a delegated proof of work service paid one for Nano before, where some companies or whatever would, for a fee, they would do the proof of work for your transaction. To get it, they'd pay the anti-spam fee if you pay them like an actual money fee. And so it's like fees with extra steps at that point, but I guess the value of Nano, something like this, would be it's something you can use for free. It's just like Twitter's unpaid tier, right? Twitter wants you to pay, right? You got to pay to get like a good service. But if you want to be like on the bus, want to ride the bus, so to speak, you can do so for free. And it's kind of like that. And I think Bitcoin used to have free transactions in every block. They'd have like include some zero fee. Do you know if Bitcoin Cash does that these days or not?
No. I mean, a miner could accept a zero fee transaction directly if they wanted. But the default relay policy is any node's not going to relay anything under one sat per byte. So, I mean, we can configure that on the user level. Like, I could set my node right now to relay those, but if other nodes aren't relaying them, I don't have a miner attached to my node. So, it's never going to get mined.
Yeah, I mean there could be something called you could make a service like a nonprofit service called the BCH bus. It just allows people if they do a captcha or whatever or whatever make sure it's not spam. You let people send some transactions for zero fees. Kind of like I don't Do you remember much of the 2017 block size war era? I don't remember if you were.
No, I was asleep during that era.
Yeah. Well, Via BTC, the mining pool, did have an interesting, they had a transaction accelerator where if you posted your transaction ID, it was kind of like a, like how RBF in Bitcoin, you pay an extra fee and rebroadcast or double spend your transaction to get it through if it gets stuck. They were just offering a free service where if you just pasted in your transaction ID, they would like prioritize, adding into their blocks some of those transactions just to like, if you cared enough to show up and say, please put my thing in, there's a higher chance that your transaction would get unstuck or get through because they would explicitly do it. And so that was like an act of kindness and charity during those dark times, which for Bitcoiners are still ongoing, you know?
Man, I just had a thought and then it completely ejected my head because I just sent a text message. My bad.
Yeah, no problem. There's always a million things going on. For some
Yeah.
reason, X says we have 178 viewers now, which is strange since I don't see that many like retweets and stuff. I wonder if it's a bug or I wonder if it's just like you mentioned Doge. And I've had episodes on Nano before. I've had them on Monero before. I've never had them on Doge recently. So maybe that's it. Maybe I just hacked it. Next time, just be like the Doge Coin Cash podcast with Calisti and Jeremy, and then just like it's all about BCH, but you just put like a Doge logo just to be fun and just see if you get a ton of engagement.
Look, I swear every time he and I come on here, we're just like, oh yeah, so when are you just going to be the Bitcoin Cash rundown? Because it seems like every other episode that's what we're talking about. And then yeah, we'll just put some sunglasses on the little Doge guy. We'll just talk about Doge Cash instead, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it's all about the Doge. Like, I actually got someone complain, be like, dude, you work for Dash, but I don't see a Dash thing on your wall. I just see a Doge. I think that looks bad. You gotta get rid of the
Cash.
Doge. And I'm just, it's a well-meaning person, but I basically was just saying the Doge stays. It's not negotiable. Like, I'm
It has
sorry.
to.
Yeah, just
I
don't
mean,
even,
just
don't.
basically, it means. I mean, no, all of my friends in real life are not talking about Bitcoin, Ethereum, BCH, Monero. No, they're talking about Dogecoin, dude. They're talking about the fucking dog coins.
Yeah, and like you have to be able to give lip service to like the meme is powerful. It precedes crypto, or I don't know, at least the cryptocurrency. I did spend Dash on that Doge pillow. And so whatever, I don't know what you're talking about. But anyway, so let's hit on the Monero thing, right? So the Monero transactions, right? I posted the chart of a Monero. At like average transaction fee versus transactions. So they've been in a lot of coins have this little like heartbeat kind of transaction thing, but around 20K a day is kind of what they've been averaging. And then in the last, you get some spikes of 30K, whatever. And then just the last couple of days, you get a big old spike to like, I think 134,000 and counting. And which is, it's a decent volume. It's not like a stress test level volume for most scalable chains, right? But it is a decent volume. The average fee dropped during that time. So anyway, did you see much about this going on before I guess I sent you some of these things?
Not really. I had only seen a few tweets in passing over the past 2 days. Not really. I think it was like I vaguely was aware that there was some kind of spam attack happening on Monero. Again, the effects unknown. I don't see people talking about it. If I'm looking at these graphs, like the Bitinfo charts graphs, and then combining that with my knowledge of how their dynamic block sizes work, I'm not actually sure it ended up affecting the network in any serious way. I do see those fees went up to about 20 cents, which is still like decent as far as like, it's not amazing. Like in BCH, I feel like that might be on the high end. For BTC, that's definitely on the low end. As far as what I would pay as a US citizen, I mean, yeah, whatever, 20 cents to somebody who's, in a country where their currency is shit, then maybe that's a little prohibitive. But, you're also paying privacy there too. So, I mean, if we're comparing 20 cents on BTC compared to 20 cents on Monero, obviously I'm going to choose Monero.
Yeah, for sure. It's so the adaptive block size, right? It's like I think Monero has like what is it, 300 kilobyte blocks or something typically. And then when the actual transaction volumes go up, then the block size grows with that. And I think it's an int I think it's a good innovation. I think that every crypto should have an adaptive block size of some kind. What I prefer is a minimum plus adaptive kind of thing, where the minimum block size is like, what is it for BCH, 32 megabytes or something? Or, and so it's just like that's base, and then it's adaptive beyond that. Something like that would be good, because right now, like, there are not many people use a lot of these chains, to be honest. But like Monero just got this, like, as we've seen in the next post here, let me post share by Monero Ninja, right? It's official, Monero is being spam attacked, pending transactions 11,000 plus. And this was today, about an hour or so ago, an hour and a half ago. And so you don't want 11,000 pending transactions, and especially if your blockchain can theoretically handle all those. So for a big burst, like if it's a titanic burst, okay, fine. If it's like 10 million plus per day, like overnight, okay. Maybe you can deal with a little bit of that. But I think that I would like to see Monero with like a several megabyte plus a minimum for the adaptive block size, honestly. I don't know which, if you have any, that's just like a thought I had. I haven't really gone too deep in it. I don't know what you think about that.
Well, it's just interesting because of how the Monero adaptive block sizes work. It's more about the economic incentive to expand the block size versus like a demand thing, like on BCH's adaptive algorithm. As far as I'm aware, with Monero, it's the miners can choose to mine a bigger block up to a limit, but they have to pay a penalty fee in order to do so. So it kind of limits the amount of growth that can happen, and then as those blocks are consistently bigger, I think like the hard limit, I think, moves in response. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I know it's a different approach because they are messing with the incentives rather than the actual storage space. So it's an interesting approach.
But it is interesting to see that. I remember when Monero used to have, for a very brief period of time, over $2 fees, because a lot of people, there was something real, like a spam attack, and the transaction proofs were just giant in size. So just the data requirements caused the fees to go insane. And then after bullet proofs were implemented, then the cost went significantly down, and now it's like you can have a bunch of transactions for cheap. One thing to always keep in mind with privacy is privacy is intensive, and because it always has to do extra data and stuff involved. Like for example, with Monero, you have to go through some extra data in order to interact with the confidential transactions part, the stealth address aspect of it. Also, every transaction has like a ring of other transactions that are decoys. All this is extra data put out, and so at like a mass level, I don't think something like this would ever be as scalable as, a pure, regular blockchain. But still, all things considered, it's doing pretty well. Like, cheap few cents or 1 cent or sub cent or whatever it is, transactions that are, one of the higher in terms of privacy out there. And yeah, it's so far it's doing well. I'd like to see what happens. I'd like to see this sustained, honestly, for like a week or two, and see where the adaptive block size goes and what backlogs are. I want to see what happens, and I hope they don't give up too soon, because this is fun to watch.
Yeah, I also wonder about the user experience there too. I mean, very much like with Nano, are the Monero users experiencing simply on the perceptive side, not on the technical side, are they experiencing delays in getting their money from one place to another? If I send you some Monero and there's that 11,000 transaction backlog, are you going to see your Monero in a timely manner?
I don't know, but I did see on the Reddit just now, because I just checked it out, and it says current attack only costs 2 XMR per day. Okay, I mean, especially if you consider it to be an attack, that's not that much. But like, as this fellow, Untraceable, don't trace me, bro, says, who has a lot of good stuff and a lot of dumb stuff too, but whatever. That's for a different day. Does transaction fees on Monero are too cheap? Fees should discourage spam while increasing profitability for miners. At current fee levels, they contribute little to these goals. A great majority of users would not notice if the minimum fee doubled. It would be negligible. Before I give my thoughts, why don't you let me know what you think on this?
Well, you know, so I guess first off, the first thing is, well, the fee being higher obviously is going to discourage use. If he's saying that, okay, we wouldn't notice the minimum fee doubled, maybe that's true, right? Uh-huh. But I think this whole idea is kind of built in this precedent of block space scarcity being valuable and this free market being this absolute thing that blockchains need to have. And I'm still coming from the angle over here in BCH is, okay, we just want as many users to be able to use the blockchain as possible and pay the minimum possible while still allowing miners to be profitable, right? We want to have the security of the network. We need proof of work and Nakamoto consensus to actually work. So we have to pay for that. There is value. We do want to pay that fee. But we don't want to pay so much fee that the system just doesn't make sense to use anymore versus alternatives such as Visa.
Yeah. The other thing that's interesting with the whole transaction backlog and stuff, with the fees are not priced in USD or purchasing power. You know, they're priced in native network units or in Monero, right? And so I am kind of hesitant, especially if you're like, oh, we gotta like grow. We can afford to double the fees or 10x the fees right now because it's still under a cent. It's fine. But then what happens when the price goes 10x? Ooh, all of a sudden now the fees are expensive. And then that could be an issue. So I'd rather keep them lower if you're expecting growth. Keep them lower so then the price and everything, you kind of grow into the fees and, you know, have it like that. That's my thought at least. So hopefully Monero, hopefully I would not increase the fees, honestly, and let the fees do what they do. And
it's like increasing taxes, right? Like increasing taxes is supposed to build more revenue for the government, but it disincentivizes whatever the thing we're getting taxed on is.
Yeah. Cause you want to very few governments are like, very few governments are like thinking like a business. The New Hampshire government is one that does, because first off, they sell liquor. They have like a liquor monopoly. For some reason, it's cheaper than the rest of the U.S. by a good margin. But so they actively try to do that. When they want their they sell commemorative liquor bottles to fund their like display in the state house for like the Hall of Flags, a historical display, instead of doing taxes. There's a bunch of weird stuff that like New Hampshire does that are kind of capitalist in as far as, you know, taxation is theft, obviously, right? But if I were to be the non-asshole Bukele, let's just say, right? If I were to be like the basic dictator of some South American nation, and I wanted to do Boomtown, some of the stuff he's done, I would definitely think would be good and helpful to do. But also as far as like tax rates and stuff, I'd kind of do a projection of like, let's just progressively like lower the taxes or just put them really low and just consider like a growth thing. Cause I want the economy to grow big enough so that the percentage that we get is going to be more than the total amount of revenue we have earlier. But do like a discount, kind of like, you know, VC funded, whatever, maybe even just see if some, like, I don't know if there's a way to like get VC money into government kind of thing, or like take bribe, but basically it's called bribes, but you know, it gets weird when you have like a coercive state doing this shit, right? But like whatever you do, so you can keep the bills on with the keep the bills paid, the lights on, without having to deal with high tax rates, while you're anticipating revenue growth up from just a small percentage of a lot of volume. And so to try to get all that volume, and that is to, there's a lot of stuff I don't like about Bukele, like, you know, the no due process and just mass imprisonment kind of thing, the BTC monopoly. Now, I don't know how much Max Kaiser's words can be taken at face value, but he seems to be saying that other coins are like not legal in El Salvador. It's like mostly just Bitcoin.
BCH is terrorist money. Are you a terrorist? And then we ratioed the shit out of them.
Yeah, all that shit. But like, is that just posturing, or like, if I try to accept payment with BCH in El Salvador or Dogecoin, am I going to get arrested, or is it favorable to just Bitcoin? Or I'm not clear on that. But the point is, Bukele did allow a non-fiat currency to be legal tender by mandating, kind of, but like, whatever. It's a little soft mandate. Who, whatever. That's good. He did get rid of capital gain taxes on this item. That's really good too. And he did, more importantly, advertise, we're open for business, foreign investment, come in here, we want to grow. And that's, from a business perspective, that's a lot of good things you'd like to see from the country. So mixed bag with that guy, right? Some of the stuff he's doing makes a lot of sense, some doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I think it's just important that things are instated on a voluntary basis. And I mean, because if I'm a self-proclaimed anarchist, right, I don't want the long arm of the state to come and throw me into jail, or just because I'm not using the right Bitcoin or something.
It's funny because when you make a parliamentary inquiry in, at least in the New Hampshire legislature, I don't know how it works elsewhere, a lot of times if you want to make a statement, you just say, like, if I know that blah 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 is this, then that. It's just the way you have to phrase it, kind of like as a question type thing. And there's one day that about a dozen reps came up, and they all started their thing with, if I know that taxation is theft, blah blah blah. And the opposing party was very upset with over that. But on the Monero thing, Batbot, who's a Zcash shell, like a very prominent, I guess very prolific one. One of the few Zcash people to be like biting back at Monero as much as they've been bitten, sort of thing. Quote tweeted this, like, statistics of the my Monero node says, is Monero undergoing some type of de-anonymizing spam attack? And that's the interesting part, right? And so basically, with a ring, and then someone says, with a ring size of 16, you need to keep up such attack with approximately 70% of transaction volume for at least a month to be able to really determine blah blah blah. However, you'd still neither see sender nor recipient or amount because of the confidential transactions. But anyway, this is kind of interesting because, and this is one of those things where the decoy privacy model, and we did talk a little bit about this on the space yesterday, the decoy privacy model always has like some caveats and stuff. And Monero, for example, had the people were making Mardinals, Monero ordinals in the past, and they modified the code. I guess they got rid of the ability to do that from like restricting the op return or whatever it was. I don't remember how they did that, but because it was a privacy nightmare, because now all of a sudden you have completely non-fungible tokens, NFTs, on chain, and so you can rule out that out of the anonymity set, out of the ring signatures. You can just kind of like, oh, these are this, so it's got to be one of these few, and then just harms privacy of the entire network. And so if a single spammer is doing like 70% of the network, every time someone is sending it, they're like 70% of, let's just say 70% of the ring size, they know that that's them. Therefore, it could only be one of these three. So it could dramatically harm actually privacy for some people. Of course, you still have a lot of decoys to whack through, and as pointed out, you don't really know the amounts and your stealth addresses, right? So you can't be like, oh, look, that guy has that much, but you can start to see, you can't you sort of start to see the transaction graph reappear a little bit with enough of this. And that is a fantastic point about the fee thing, right? Whereas if you're talking about a transparent blockchain where people seeking privacy can, they have their own anonymity set out of that, whereas a spam attack like this, everyone's privacy is affected by that. That's a very different thing because of the way the ring signatures work. And so for Monero, maybe they do need to keep the fees high. Well, I wouldn't say high, but like a couple cents per transaction at least, in order to mitigate or make this kind of attack very expensive to do.
Right.
Maybe. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, I am not so sure that there's going to be real success in actually de-anonymizing anything. I mean, the best you're going to get is, like you said, the transaction graph, which I suppose could be useful. Maybe you have some other kind of metadata that you could be correlating with that transaction graph to maybe try to de-anonymize people. But overall, to me, it kind of seems like Monero is definitely working as intended here. It's keeping things completely obfuscated, and that's the real draw there, compared to the transparent blockchain. Even if we use something like Cash Fusion, with enough external metadata, somebody could still very easily spy on all of my financial activities, and that is problematic. So, I mean, to me, that just alludes to a bright future with chains that can atomic swap to and from Monero, because that improves both Monero privacy through the anonymity set during attacks like this, as well as the privacy of the transparent chain.
Yeah, absolutely. And the privacy battle is a it's an ongoing arms race because one of my good friends, Naomi Brockwell, has kind of become an expert in this area and going to all these like FedCon. Like, it's funny that like going to a conference, it was, I don't remember what it was called, but it was internally affectionately referred to amongst like some Liberty people we knew as FedCon, because it was like all feds going there, like literally all spooks and like two or three anarcho-cypherpunks. But like the kind of surveillance that is available to state actors is terrifying, absolutely terrifying. And so, yeah, I cannot do anything except for root for Monero in this case to do the best they can, because we need everyone doing the best they can, because we need the most privacy possible, because it's so otherwise easy to compromise, I guess.
Yeah, in my professional career, I would I call it a privilege maybe of for a federal contractor and learning about things that I'm under NDA about, and it's just really scary. It's really scary, the kind of stuff that they've got. I mean, like the whole Snowden reveal was scary enough, and then to see that that didn't really stop them from doing these kind of things at all. It's like where will we have justice is my big question. And that really spans beyond technology too, just all of everything happening here in the US and in the world. What are we gonna do? You know, what's the answer? And I think honestly, in particular Bitcoin Cash and Monero, but you know, kind of this crypto technology in general is our last bastion of being able to preserve our freedoms. I think cryptocurrency in particular is one of, if not the only chance that we'll get for a nonviolent revolution.
Absolutely, because as far as like su what supports a state entity, obviously violence is a big part of it. The ability to wage war and arrest people and stuff is a big thing. But like before they execute that, the biggest thing they could execute is financial control and shut down your bank accounts. And so if they can't do that, it just becomes a lot easier, especially if you can withhold your value from them. And of course, a lot of people go to prison, and, you know, Erwin Schiff and all that kind of stuff, right? But it still technically could be like nonviolent until you like, okay, we've run out of money, we can't do this anymore type thing. So yeah, I mean, I really strongly believe in that, which is also why I like thought I'd throw the Dogecoin thing in here too, because the scaling thing, there's two big elements to like, oh, big block doesn't work kind of stuff. Well, one thing is you can't do it, like it just, you can't process that many transactions. It's not feasible. And the other is it's not financially feasible because you have increased node and miner requirements, and you just, you know, well, for 1 cent, you know how many 1 cent transactions? Well, let's look at how many 1 cent transactions. So, Dogecoin transactions, right? This put up the historical chart here, right? I don't know why it says Dogecoin, comma, buff Dogecoin transactions chart. Oh yeah, maybe it just shows both of them together, whatever. There was a coin called Buff Doge at one point. Maybe it's hidden in there somewhere, I don't know. Anyway, but so looking back to 2023 three. It was like 20,000 or so transactions. I remember actually, if you look at the all-time type thing, Dogecoin used to be in the 20 to 50,000 transaction range, and then when Elon Mania hit, it actually dipped because the fee was priced in Doge, like one Doge per transaction. And when the price of Doge went up, it became expensive to transact just because of the denomination, because and the nodes had to reconfigure. And so the transactions went down actually because of Elon Mania into around the 20K range until middle of last year, about, May. You went from 17K and a big old spike all the way up to like 2.17 million or something like that. And then back down, another pump up to 100,000s. And then towards the end of the year, you're down back in the 20 to 40,000 range kind of thing. But then since then, it's been pretty consistent into the millions of transactions, especially this year. And so we have, 1 to 2 million transactions on the daily. So now let's look at the fees, right? And as far as I know, I think the average or the median Doge, the average and median are very similar for Doge fees right now. So it's like one in the 1 to 2 cent range for a transaction, which for a cheap coin is kind of a lot, but for a something mass used, it's not a lot at all. It's still very acceptable. It's like who in developing countries couldn't afford 1 to 2 cents? Maybe some, but very few, right? Most people could pay that for a transaction. But then you look at the fee revenue from CryptoFees.info, which is my favorite, I guess, coin progress tracking site, although it needs a lot more chains and there's a lot of nuance and stuff. But so if you look at like January or whatever this year, 4,000 or so USD per day as far as like transaction fees. Now we're getting up into like the 40, 30s, and 40,000 range per day. That's not that bad, actually. Like, that's and you go back to the list of the crypto fees. Obviously, Ethereum's generating 31 million in fees a day. It's insane. Uniswap, which is on Ethereum, obviously is 4.5 million a day. BTC is 3.4 million a day. So BTC is third tier, third to a shitcoin swapper, I guess.
So just to clarify, when I'm looking at, say,
Yes.
Ethereum and Uniswap, does Ethereum include Uniswap or are they separate?
I'm pretty sure it includes Uniswap. I think this is just like all the fees that are on the network that,
Got
it
it.
could, it might not act, it might not because some of the fees sometimes like would go to the contract holders or whatever. I don't know how they. I'd have to actually check that out to be sure. Maybe it just like some easy napkin math about do all those shaded ones all add up to what Ethereum is? But anyway, point is you got Ethereum, Bitcoin, BNB, which is and then Arbitrum and Optimism are Polygon. So and then
I'm talking
Polygon
about
takes a
your
big.
general.
Yeah, so these are all like Ethereum's other than BNB. They're all. This is all Ethereum, right? Which is a crazy statement on Ethereum, right? But and then there's knockoff Ethereum here, and then you go down to Dogecoin. So literally, as far as the first page, and of course, there's a million other chains there, and Cardano's at 20,000, 21,000, whatever. That's also a smart contract chain. So first of all, you could tell smart contract stuff is just almost everything that's paying right now at this scale. But also you find out that it's like Bitcoin. I mean, it's Ethereum. It's, all of Ethereum is like almost everything. Then there's BTC. Then there's BNB. And then Dogecoin. Dogecoin is a top four most profitable blockchain right now. And I don't know what the hell they're doing on there, but it's paying the
They're having a
bills.
lot of fun. That's what.
Much wow, for sure. Much wow.
And there is
Yeah.
value to fun, right? We can price fun.
And I wonder how much Jeremy in the comments said it, pretty sure it includes. So, yeah. It could be. That would be interesting. But like definitely the fact that you got you can that's something like a reasonable amount of like fee revenue. As far as I know, it's around 2%, up to 2% of the block reward from Dogecoin is fees right now. Not bad at all, right? Yeah. And you 10x that, which I think Agnew Pickens in the live chat of, ooh, speaking of live chats, I gotta check and see if anyone is, nope, no one's dropping super chats, good. But I think he was saying that he said Doge Network is pretty clogged up. I've not checked the mempool or anything on Dogecoin. I'd like to maybe see that. See how, if people are having transaction issues. But the point is, I mean, we've seen stress tests. I mean, I think like the Dash community stopped doing them because they're just like, yep, we can do it. You know, and every once in a while you have like a new upgrade or feature, you fix it. BCH has done tons. So you just, okay, fine. BSV is just one entire stress test. That's all they do. Just a
stress test. BSV is just stress, no test.
Yeah, stress, no test, like low T. Stress, no test. Anyway, but so we proved that we could do mega volumes, like at least in the single millions is very easy, and then tens to more. Or so imagine Dogecoin's doing 2 million is pulling in a nice little profit for 1 penny transactions, or 2 penny or whatever it is. 10x that. That's something that we've seen Bitcoin Cash handle before, I'm pretty sure, for example. Then all of a sudden, now we're talking about $300,000 to $400,000 a day that the network is producing in fees. And that was what BTC does a lot of times. I mean, recently with the whole ordinals thing, it's gotten up, it's gone in the millions, but like during the last bear market, it was in that range. So like, that's not that bad. And that's just for 20 million a day. Some transactions might be, you know, you might have more, like you might have expensive transactions, especially if you do like a smart contract, something or other, or whatever. There might be cases where you might have a more expensive thing, but the point is you can make money off of this stuff. You just need to make sure to get the users, and you have to make sure it actually works enough that it's consistent, and you just don't bloat stuff like Ethereum did. And it's kind of crazy. And what we're talking about here, by the way, is regular blockchain stuff. I did an interview that I'm going to put out within the next couple of weeks with Justin Bonds on the fallacy of L2 scaling sort of thing. And
he loves that.
Yeah, he loves that stuff. And we kind of went into some hard questions and stuff too. And I actually learned a lot about L2s from that discussion. But the point is, this is just for like payment chains, right? You could do, like, if you're doing data chains, you have a lot more data you're thrown through and a lot more individual transactions. And at that point, scaling becomes a bigger problem, but it's still, because of sharding, it becomes just very easy. I don't want to say easy, but it's very doable to have like 5,000 TPS, no problem on, you know, L1. And so that's kind of the most extreme level of that. And basically, I think what he said is a payment coin should not even need to think about sharding. You can just do it without it because it's, you know, you can scale. And I guess he's very harsh on the whole L2 thing about it's like a grift and a scam for like rent seekers and all this kind of stuff. And like, I don't know. There's got to be some of that. There's definitely got to be some of that.
I mean, I am also kind of, I'll speak against like L2s myself. And again, coming from BCH, I look at these, all of these various utility tokens that are on their own L1s and on their own L2s. And I say, what's the point? Like, let's take Filecoin, for instance. I think that's a really good example. It's its own L1. I don't see any reason why we couldn't simply have Filecoin just be a cash token. And I mean, that can even be managed such that you can still do the whole proof of storage thing and then have your proof of storage program. Like, let's say you still run a Filecoin node, and all this Filecoin node is doing is doing the proof of storage and then committing that proof to an NFT or something. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no reason you can't do that with cash tokens, right? So what do we need a whole L1 for? And then also, would you ever use Filecoin as a payment coin? Probably not. So when you have BCH as the base, and its base value proposition is payment coin, and then you make that payment coin programmable so that you can have covenants, restrictions on how that coin is spent. You have the UTXO model that allows that value to be split and recombined fairly arbitrarily. And then you add on robust smart contract capabilities with introspection and state management through tokens. You pretty much solve all of the problems that you run into with other smart contract chains and other data chains. Because look at every other smart contract chain, it doesn't really matter if you can enforce a program. I can just do that with regular C. And if me and my counterparty agree on my C program, I don't need a blockchain for that, right? So the whole point is that we're already using money as this medium of exchange. What does a legal contract do, a paper contract do? It enforces some terms of how assets are divided up. That's all it does, yeah. Right? So I care about, I'm going to get $1 million of funding for my company. How is that $1 million going to be split up among the members or among the shareholders? We have contracts in place to enforce that. So it's the same thing with a smart contract. If I'm going to get 1,000 BCH, how is that 1,000 BCH going to be divvied up? We can use smart contracts to enforce that. You don't get that value on other chains.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess we proved, or we're starting to prove that like stuff can scale, you can make money off of it too. And then the Nano and Monero thing, we're just sort of pushing the individual models. One thing I've seen is some people are talking about we should get like Lightning on Monero and stuff. And I'm just like, let's not go down this again. And I do think that I would like to see. The problem with Lightning is it's convoluted, right? I mean, the problem with Lightning, there's a lot of problems as a mass scaling solution, obviously. It just doesn't work. It's just shit. Don't even try. But as far as like a useful tech, the problem is it's so convoluted to like strap in. But like, as I've mentioned before, like a social network where you want to have like a trust minimized sort of way of bridging into tiny micropayments between things. And you just don't want to bloat the main chain. Okay, maybe there's a use case there. I just think that for that, you'd probably have a better, more programmable, just do a side chain, right? Mm-hmm. Do like a, you know, like let's just say social.cash, right? Someone does like a drive chain type thing that just like has like 10 10 federated validators for this whole like tipping chain that bridges in and out of BCH, let's say. Mm-hmm. And then it just, 10 social media giants run this thing, and then people tipping back and forth every transaction, whatever. It's still resolved in like real BCH at the end of the day, and it's still like, that's fine. That's a lot easier than like managing channel liquidity and stuff to just like bridge into like when you start your account, you just like top up your balance once in a while, and then you just withdraw your balance once in a while. That's it. It's just a lot easier than like, how much liquidity is in this channel? Someone has to manage it, all this stuff. So, yeah, even when trying to say something good about Lightning, I didn't. Sorry.
Well, it was actually you who taught me that the real use case there is, okay, well, if I have like a multi-party, like real-time, like sports bet, me and you and Jeremy all want to get together and bet on the Super Bowl, right? We can do that in real time, the whole bar tab thing. I didn't actually realize that use case until you explained it to me. I didn't see the value of routed payment channels.
Yeah, it is valuable. What isn't, just the more general purpose it is, the less valuable it is, right? So like the way Phoenix Wallet does things where you open up like kind of like an account with them, even though it's non-custodial, like they can't rug you. You open up like a channel with them, you fund the channel capacity with them, and then just back and forth. If that was analogous to starting up a social media account where you just like, okay, fund your Twitter account, you send a transaction, goes on chain, costs like 30 cents or something, let's just say, because it's a complicated thing. And then it's just back and forth all over the place for like a hundredth of a cent per transaction. Every time you like, you go weep, 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 weep. That could work. Yeah, I guess. It just has to be very managed by like a company. Whereas if you have like a general purpose sidechain, like drive chain style, it's just like an L1, except it isn't, you know? So you don't have those restrictions of like having to manage channel liquidity. It just like works anyone to anywhere, right? Whereas if you have like the Twitter Lightning Hub and all Twitter users bridge into that and start using it, it's like Twitter has to manage the liquidity and everything of the whole network. Whereas, you know, if you're like, oh, I'm going to, Facebook wants to do it too. They want to use the same token. It's like you can't, they have to then start a big hub and connect across there and all this kind of stuff. So that's when it gets a little interesting. But anyway.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that we would even need a sidechain there either.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you can just use main chain for stuff, and why would you not do that? And because then you still have the trade-off of the centralization risk behind a bridge, unless you have some kind of decentralized bridge, which has never been proven yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing about, like, Cosmos to Cosmos bridging a lot easier from those chains, because for some reason, the way IBC works, which I'm not very in inter-blockchain communication, I'm not super familiar, and I'm obviously not very technical either, but if you usually when you bridge, when you run a bridge, you have to have like a full node of both blockchains. But if they're all Cosmos based, you only have to have a light client of all the other blockchains you want to bridge to and from.
Well, that makes
a lot easier. Just it's like a, you know, they call it a layer zero or whatever. Which,
you know, I guess also like the Thor swap is similar, is it not? I mean, yeah. I know they have as the intermediary token, but I mean, when I did a BTC to BCH swap, or I'm sorry, it was actually the other way around. I was able to use the Electrum and Electron Cash wallets self-custody the whole way. So I mean, they've got to be doing something right as well. I know you're a big advocate of the Thor chain.
Yeah, I mean, it works in a more complicated way because it's like a liquidity pools, and you're swapping asset for asset, and each Thor node has, because it's a cross-chain swap, they have to run full nodes of every single network, which is kind of interesting. That's something that I would really like to explore in depth, because most of the Thor chain, Maya, chain flip, etc., and Sarai, whatever content I put out, has been like just positive, like, oh, this is cool, this is how it works. Thor chain is not adding any new chains right now because it doesn't make economic sense. It costs too much to run new nodes, and they just don't get the revenue in from a lot of these chains. And so it is kind of interesting from like the scaling perspective, the economic scaling, as well as other things. I'd like to really go into, you know, how all that makes sense. But anyway, that would be for a different day. Any other big things before we wrap this up?
I mean, as far as like general news, not really. If I could do a quick little shill o'clock, would you mind?
It's just about shill o'clock. Before we do shill o'clock, I just want to, I think I solved the view thing. Twitter, X, whatever, changed the way it counts the views. Whereas before it would just say how many people are watching right now. And now it says how many people have watched total. Because, you know, at the end of the broadcast, it gives a total views. It just does a running tally now. And so I think they're trying to encourage a lot more streaming. And I think that if it's like one person's watching, it's just disheartening, right? But if it's like 28 views, okay, we're getting somewhere. 100 people have seen this. This is great. So I think Elon's pumping my numbers because I'm at 355 views now. So. Think or 356. Whoa.
I wonder if that's just impressions too, or if you have to like unmute or like actually click on this or something.
I don't know. Let me see. What are the, well, the post right now says 92 views, but that's probably just because I haven't refreshed it. I will check it out and refresh it. Anyway, it's chill o'clock.
Well, like my tweet right now that says Kaluki face reveal has 215 views, and I see 356 on your video. Let me click into this quote tweet. I see 734 views on the tweet, 356 on the video.
So that must be, like actually like, I think it's got to be either like click on it, like unmute it, or it's got to be hover over it for a certain period of time.
Yeah. Maybe you have to watch like at least 3 seconds or something.
Yeah. I mean, I will have the stats on this soon, as far as like how many people watched at least this many seconds and stuff. It does tell you all that. And on X, it's extremely low. But, you know, as far as, like, people watch for a couple seconds to take off.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, also, because before we do the shill o'clock, because we were talking about, like, block size and fees and stuff earlier. And then I never actually got to addressing the point of, there. I really don't think that there's going to be a problem with blockchain such as Doge or BCH, increasing the block size, being able to run a node affordably and miners still making good revenue. Like I just simply, that's not an issue when you run the numbers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's gonna be a problem at all.
I did some napkin math on if we had millisatoshis, we're adding three digits to the end of the decimal. If we paid 1 sat per kilobyte or 1 millisatoshi per byte, then some napkin math, we're assuming like a little over 700,000 transactions per block at 256 megabyte blocks. Basically, that's about $256,000 per block with millisatoshi fees, right? So if you multiply that by 1,000, we're already looking into like, freaking 2 billion per block. That doesn't make sense, actually. Well,
Well,
256 megabyte. Oh yeah, okay, yeah, sorry, I'm assuming sat dollar parity. That was the conclusion there. So I kneecapped the block size to 256 megabytes because I don't know what the price is actually going to be if we had sat, or we know what the price is going to be. I don't know what the block size would be at that level of usage. Like, I don't know what the actual activity would be at $100 million per coin. But at $100 million per coin, 256 megabyte blocks, maxing out average transactions, that's $256,000 per block, right? And those are conservative numbers. So I just don't think that there's ever going to be an actual fee problem on these high volume chains.
Now, if you're interested in this stuff, I don't know if you know Age of Doge, if you see him around on the Twitter,
No, I haven't seen him.
EvilDuck92, Eric Olson. He's a big Dash dude, but he's also just a big blocker. He's been an OG, like a 2011 Bitcoin. You like all the big blockers, right? Are always like the not present company excluded, maybe, but almost everyone else is like the super OG people. He did. I had him on like once a month or so. I do like a Dash specific one of these shows, the Dash podcast. And the last one he was on a couple weeks ago, he broke this thing down as far as like from a like the scaling. He had a whole he has tables and spreadsheets. Or if you just look him up on X, he just posts these things anyway. You can just watch like 8, 9 minute videos that he posts. But he does like a spreadsheet of like node costs and for a certain amount of fees, like what it gets you, and basically like the price fundamentals. But it's from a Dash perspective. But I'm sure he'd be happy to share the methodology to just add for any other coin. And I think he does have BCH and Doge for a couple of these charts in as well, where basically just says at mass volume, you get this much coming in, and then the server costs or whatever go up to this if you process this many, and so therefore, blah blah blah. He actually breaks down the economics of a mass L1 scaling kind of thing for like a payments thing, and so that's pretty cool. He did some really thorough research.
Is he at Age of Doge?
You know, he's at EvilDuck92.
Ah, okay. I'm like, can't find him at all.
Yeah, I mean, I
There
couldn't
we
find. He's
go.
hard to
Mr.
find.
Olson.
Yes.
Followed by Digital Cash Network and Joel. Yep, for
Yeah.
sure. Gave him a follow.
Yeah, he's a cool dude. He has a Doge, like a real Shiba Inu.
Oh, I love that.
And so yeah, it's nice. Yeah, well, cool. Well, I want to be respectful of your time. I know you had a certain amount of time blocked out, so
Yeah,
I'll
I
let.
actually gotta go pretty much right now. So
Okay.
I'll do my quick
Well,
fill block then.
okay, I have Celine.cash queued up. So anything else you want to tell me to put up on the screen, let me
Heck
know.
yeah, we've got the flip starter, which I need to actually put a link on the homepage. I'll do that tonight for
Do
Jeremy's
you know what the
podcast.
URL is of the Flipstars? Like flipstarter.cash something or other, or like.
Flipstarter.celine.cash.
Okay, let's go. Flipstarter.celine cash. Let's try that. There we go. Oh yeah, you're at 220 out of 270 BCH for this.
Yeah, we're super close to getting funded. The community is really showing up with their support right now. We have 37 contributors. It says 38, but one of them is me doing a test. A bunch of whales just came through and put a bunch of contributions in over the past couple days. So that's been really awesome. And yeah, we just need a little less than 50 BCH to close it out, a little less than 2 weeks to get this finished up, and hopefully people are getting value out of Celine and will support our next year of development. I'm super grateful for all the contributions that have come in so far, and I'm really hopeful this makes it to the finish line.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you're watching this, You should try the Celine wallet. I do have it on my phone. I have tried it out. It's, as far as like, it's the great replacement for the old Bitcoin.com wallet, which ended up not being that fun for regular payments anymore. And yeah, so just throw them some BCH, use the wallet, and there you go. Yeah, keep the P2P economy moving along. All right, that's good. Also, KZ Callisti on X slash Twitter. So Callisti, but with a KZ before it. That's it. That's it, right?
Yeah, and if you also go to Callisti.cash just in a browser, it'll redirect to my Twitter.
Let me try that out. Just make sure fact check you in real time. might be the resolving's taking a little bit of time, but whatever. Yes, it
Oh,
did
it's
work.
probably trying to do HTTPS. It's a redirect, so it doesn't work with HTTPS.
Yeah, it worked. All right, cool stuff. Thanks for being on. Everyone, thanks for watching. Thanks for pumping out my numbers, all the people on X, etc.
Yeah, thanks
And
for having me on again. Appreciate it.
no
It's always fun.
problem. Yeah, and just use your crypto, buy something with it over the weekend. Try that out. I know I will. All right, peace, guys. Bye bye.